A milestone moment for the Ummah in the century since the abolition of the Khilafah has been the jihad against the Soviets in Afghanistan following the latter's invasion of the country. Afghanistan, 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 Afghanistan. Man most instrumental not only in generating international support but also in inspiring volunteers to travel to Afghanistan for the jihad was a Palestinian alim, Sheikh Abdullah Azzam.
And even from the kuffar viewpoint, you know, even though they hate him, they recognize his importance. You know, Time magazine said that he was responsible for reviving jihad in the 20th century. They have said that he is the Muslim leader who's been most responsible for expanding the jihad into a full-blown international holy war without borders. It was this man, it was his thought, it was his ideology that really inspired the people. And we know the Afghan jihad, that was a school that spread the fire around the world.
So instrumental was he in the struggle that Sheikh Azzam would become synonymous with mention of this jihad, and some would even call him the Afghan jihad.
He himself participated in some of the battles against the Russians. Among them was one of the most fiercest of battles was the one in Jaji in 1987, the Ramadan of 1987. He saw it as a sheikh. It was his job to facilitate the matter in every single way for the jihad in Afghanistan in a way that no one else could do that. So one of the things he began doing was he began to write down firsthand the kiramat, the miracles of the mujahideen, and he began to record them. And in Peshawar he would give lectures. You know, to inspire the people, to tell the people, whenever there's any problems concerning the Mujahideen, especially you have to realize that the Mujahideen, they are a force of voluntary people from different cultures. So when different cultures meet, there are always going to be a lot of misunderstandings. You know, he was there to sort it out. He was the focus point for them. And he would also participate with other leaders of other Islamic groups like Ikhwan, Jamaat al-Islamiyah. You know, he would participate with them to coordinate activities to make the jihad in Afghanistan as powerful as it can be. So more and more so, you know, he began, you know, the jihad, as the jihad began to influence him, he influenced the jihad itself.
Sheikh Azzam was born in Palestine just 7 years before the Nakba in 1941 near Jenin in the West Bank. His home was one of learning, where he was fed with love for Allah, his Rasul, the truthful, the martyrs and the pious. The Sheikh's life is one which typifies that of a real traveller. He was never comfortable with the worldly life and its trappings, nor did he ever embrace any nationalist identity. In doing this, he entirely defined himself as an Ummati.
A kind of exclusion and rootlessness. That's basically what Azzam's life was like. He basically was the sort of citizen of the Islamic world, more than a citizen of any one Middle Eastern country. And to understand that, you have to look at the vagabond life that he led. And, you know, many will be familiar with sort of the broad outlines of his life, but he was born in Palestine in 1941. And then in 1967, because of the Six-Day War, where Israel annexed the West Bank, including his village, he decided to flee. He walked on foot from the Jenin area to Amman. And then he was never to return. And from this point onwards, he was a refugee, basically, and he was living at the mercy of the regimes that hosted him. And, you know, that would work fine for periods, but in other times, not so well.
The Sheikh was most qualified in the Islamic sciences. He attained a Sharia degree in Damascus in 1966, a master's degree in Sharia from Al-Azhar in 1970, and a PhD in Usul al-Fiqh soon after. Sheikh Abdullah Azzam was groomed and grew up with the tarbiyah of the Ikhwan al-Muslimun. He always appreciated the efforts of this group and held it in high esteem until his passing. He considered Imam Hassan al-Banna as an individual who laid down the fundamental principles for the Islamic movement and Sayyid Qutb as a teacher for the Ummah. At the same time, he had strong bonds with all mainstream Islamic movements and was a genuine well-wisher for all of them. Sheikh Azzam participated in the jihad against the Zionist occupiers in Palestine for a short time. He, however, grew disillusioned by the secular Palestinian leadership at the time and lamented how very few fighters performed salah and how many would spend their nights playing card games and listening to music. Sheikh Azzam taught Islam at prestigious universities in Jordan and later in Saudi Arabia.
Azam was a Forrest Gump of Islamism. He was present in all the places where history was being made at the time. And I'm talking here about the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So he's there in Palestine in the 48 war between with Israel. He's there in 1967. He's there during Black September of 1971. He's there, of course, in Afghanistan later on. And he also meets with a whole bunch of people who are senior figures in the Islamist movement. He meets pretty much every kind of famous person in the Muslim Brotherhood in this period. So he's a very useful prism for viewing the history of this period.
It was while in Saudi Arabia in 1980 that Sheikh Azam got to meet a delegation of Afghan Mujahideen who came to perform Hajj. When he was appraised about the jihad in Afghanistan, he immediately warmed towards it. He soon gave up his teaching post in Saudi and relocated to Pakistan, where he taught for a while in Islamabad before moving to Peshawar. Got to know the leaders of jihad and was warned by the sacrifices that were being made to defend a Muslim land from communist occupation. From Peshawar, close to the Afghan border, he then established Maktab-e-Khadamat, or the services office, with the aim of offering all possible services to the Afghan Mujahideen. Projects were established and managed to support the jihad. Volunteers were sought from the Muslim world and were received, trained and allocated to the front lines. He toured Afghanistan widely and fought on the front lines. He would return to Peshawar, from which he spared no effort to promote the jihad to the world. He travelled worldwide and wrote books and published magazines to promote the cause.
He lived in a completely different time as far as jihadi activism was concerned. It was a different era. And if you were calling for jihad or doing jihad in Afghanistan or elsewhere, you didn't have to leave a clandestine life. You could be, so people like Azam, they were out and about in the world to an extent that later militants could not. For Azam, and in the beginning of the lives of people like bin Laden too, it was very different. They traveled around. And so we get these stories in the book of Azam, you know, traveling to America, going to Spain, going to Italy, going to Germany, to the UK, giving speeches, and operating completely openly. وَعَدَ اللَّهُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ وَالْمُؤْمِنَاتِ جَنَّاتٍ تَجْرِي مِنْ تَحْتِهَا الْأَنْهَارُ خَالِدِينَ فِيهَا وَمَسَاكِنَ طَيِّبَةً فِي جَنَّاتِ عَدْنٍ وَرِضْوَانٌ مِنَ اللَّهِ أَكْبَرُ. Sheikh Abdullah Azam utilized every minute of his time to maximum effect. He was meticulous in keeping up his daily recitations of the Quran. When traversing on foot through the mountains of Afghanistan, he would sometimes complete an entire khatam from memory. He could easily read up to 6 ajza in a single sitting. Likewise, he was meticulous in making dhikr and was eager to follow every practice of the sunnah. He fasted every alternate day, the fast of Dawood alayhi salam, and strongly encouraged others to keep the sunnah fasts of Monday and Thursday. He firmly despised backbiting and never responded to evil done to him personally with similar behavior. He maintained that defaming any Islamic movement was harmful to the ummah as a whole. He characterized every Islamic movement as a stream that flowed into the great river of Islam. If one tried to cut it off, he said, one would cut off so many benefits that could have accrued to Islam. He revered his parents, maintained ties with relatives, and honored the ulama. He was a paragon of generosity, and there was no contradiction between his words and actions. His understanding of the centrality of jihad and the role of the Afghan jihad in particular was the product of much contemplation and a deep study of Sharia. He had a firm faith in the future of the jihad and very early on predicted that this jihad would be the cause of the demise of the Soviet Union.
He was not concerned about the surveillance of intelligence agencies, and while speaking to officials at the highest government levels, he was resolute that the Mujahideen were not to be lackeys of any state. In the Sheikh's characterization, Muslims worldwide had reached the pits of humiliation due to being mired in materialism. He would lament how the concerns of Muslims were now about their food and drink, hairstyles and clothing. His stance was that the Ummah had lost sight of a fundamental duty, which was the obligation of jihad. Everyone, he said, began interpreting jihad according to their own desires to circumvent its Sharia obligation.
الناس يتغافلون عن هذه القضية ولا تجد على ألسنة المسلمين يرددون سوى كيف قام الفعل الفلاني وأمريكا غير راضية وكيف نجح الفعل الفلاني.
Muslims were being sacrificed like sheep without a shepherd. The state of the Ummah squeezed his chest and tore at the inner depth of his heart and provided impetus for him to pursue and be steadfast on his chosen course of action. Sheikh Azam did not see the Afghan jihad in isolation, but envisioned it to play a key role in the liberation of Masjid al-Aqsa.
He says here that the mind will not be settled, and the determination will not be, you know, firm until we go, until we return to Palestine with jihad. And we have made it a duty upon ourselves that we will not go back from this tariq al-Rabbani. Rabbani means divine, and this divine way that has a route between it, Kabul, and Quds. So basically, you know, all these things make very clear that basically his next aim after Afghanistan was Palestine itself.
Sheikh Abdullah Azzam always held the Afghan people in the greatest esteem and urged other volunteers to allow Afghans space to sort out internal disagreements. When the Soviets were forced out of Afghanistan in 1989, Sheikh Azzam played an instrumental role in bridging the gaps between various Mujahideen groups. This was a role he was playing right until the eve of his martyrdom on Friday, November the 24th, 1989.
On the night of November 24th, which was Thursday night, Friday was November 24th, he had spent pretty much most of the night with Rabbani, and a lot of it with Hikmachir, discussing with them how to make peace between the two groups. Okay, because like I said, right, he was an instrumental point in bringing the Mujahideen together. And he had in fact made them sign a contract, ahad, a pledge, and it was his intention to announce his pledge in the Jumu'ah, in the Salat of Jumu'ah, in his khutbah. So he spent most of the night doing this, okay? And then in the morning he got up, you know, he got himself ready for, after Fajr obviously, he went to sleep, he got up, he prayed the Salat of Duha, you know, he his children described him that, you know, he washed himself, got put on new clothes, in fact he wore new clothes that day, that he was wearing for the first time ever, okay? And he sat with his children for a little while, heard him recite some of the Quran. This is the Friday of November 24th. And then he with his two sons, Muhammad, whose age was 20, and Ibrahim, whose age was 15, they got into a car, and this car they had never ever driven before. This is the first time they were driving this car, okay? And then they started to go. And as they were going through a street called Jamud, which is one of the main streets, they were turning to a small side road, a 20 kilogram bomb, and I think just before this, a little while, Sheikh Abdul Azam got off to walk beside the car, and just before this, a 20 kilogram bomb exploded, and the amount of TNT used here is the amount they used to kill, actually, to destroy tanks. This is the amount of TNT they used. It exploded, destroying, you know, totally... separating the bodies of his two sons, so much so that they found parts of their bodies 100 meters away. The body of Sheikh Abdullah Azam, it itself was untouched. It was something. It seems that he was shaheed from the blast itself of the explosion. He wasn't himself torn away. You know, his leg wasn't dismembered. It seemed that he died from internal bleed, internal hemorrhage. The brothers themselves, you know, at this time, when they all came out of Jumu'ah, because they were all waiting for the khutbah, they came out, they saw what had happened, they showed the Sheikh, they took him, they immediately took him to the hospital, they got to the hospital, and there, you know, is either on the way or at the hospital itself, he was shaheed. And so the life of one of the greatest heroes that's ever walked, that's walked in the last century, definitely, he was shaheed, taken, assassinated by the enemies of the Muslims.
لا تقل ما تشهي إنه حي سعيد ما تشهي ما تشهي.
Until present, the mystery of the perpetrators of Sheikh Azam's assassination has not been cracked. In his passing, Sheikh Abdullah Azam had joined what he had once famously described as the caravan of martyrs. Islamic history, he said, is not written except with the blood of shuhada. I feel, and Allah knows best, he would say, that Afghanistan is the beginning of change for the cause of world history and the domination of Islam and the reformation of Muslims. Sheikh Azam popularized the idea of armed jihad, which went on to be developed further by other Muslim groups with tactics that often were immensely problematic and controversial. Added to this was the splintering of the jihad movement after his passing and the shadowy role of governments and intelligence agencies in infiltrating and besmirching the face of jihad. Called the reviver of jihad in the 20th century. Prior to Sheikh Azam's work, declarations of jihad in the 20th century, such as against Israel, were essentially rhetorical and served more as a religious blessing of wars already declared and organized by secular bodies. But with his tireless travel and exhortation of activists, thousands of whom traveled to be trained and to fight in Afghanistan, what Sheikh Azam called for actually came about. Sheikh Azam was shaped by the dispossession that met Muslims after the carving up of Muslim lands, as well as the repression he witnessed in Arab nation states. He acutely recognized this and vividly remembered the Khilafah.
He was fundamentally skeptical of governments, and this has to do, I think, with his overall view of the world and of history, in that he considered basically that the nation states of the Middle East were all artificial entities imposed by the West and the Zionists. And that, you know, the ideal, the natural state of the region was a caliphate. And he was very nostalgic about the fall of the caliphate. That's, by the way, one of the reasons he's very popular in Turkey, Azam is. But he remained very skeptical of regimes in the region.
In his bequest, Sheikh Abdullah Azam apologized to his son. I have neglected you, but what can I do? The problems of the Muslims cause a nursing mother to neglect a suckling child. The horrors that have pained the Islamic society will make the hair of young children grow grey. I was unable to live in ease and contentment while the fire of tribulations was burning the heart of the Muslims.
لا تقل لا تقل مات الشهيد إنه حي سعيد إنه في كان في الرحمن مثواه الخلود إنه في كان في الرحمن مثواه الخلود.